Welcome back to another episode of the Nationwide Podcast. I am Ashida Joseph, and today we're going to be delving into a very serious and critical topic, one that has impacted our society, and that topic is mental health. Now today with me I have Dr. David Johnson, and he is someone who is passionate about mental health in the Caribbean. So Dr. Johnson, could you please tell me about yourself and what got you so passionate about mental health?
Pleased to be here, Ashida, and certainly as you refer to me, I am a doctor, a medical doctor by training, but I am the president and founder of Let's Unpack It. Let's Unpack It started back in 2020 in the midst of medical school. Very stressful semester for me, and I reached out to some of my friends and they shared with me that they were also struggling, and out of that I created Let's Unpack It as an Instagram page at that time to be a safe space for young people to come talk about mental health and well-being without the fear of ridicule and judgment. And then we know that a couple months later COVID descended upon our region. And of course, that brought with it some challenges. And while everyone was indeed focused on vaccination, on physical health and well-being, all important things, I personally felt that not enough was being done to address the mental health and well-being of Caribbean children and youth. And so naturally, what was an Instagram page then switched into an advocacy movement. And for the past couple of years, then we've grown into a fully fledged non-governmental organization. So for me, it's because of my own lived experience with mental health struggles that I got into this work. And the reason why I stay is because I want every young person to feel empowered to realize their human right to mental health and well-being.
Yes, please. So having started Let's Unpack It, how has it been since then?
It's been quite a journey. Of course, like I said, this was not the intention. It was really just to be a safe space at first. But then as we led and leaned more into advocacy, it became a real passion for me. And so we've managed to build out across four pillars. Number one, psychoeducation, which means that we're doing work around stigma reduction. We're doing work around boosting the mental health literacy of children, young people, and their carers. Beyond that, we're also doing a lot of work in the advocacy and policy space. So we work very closely with other civil society organizations based in Barbados, throughout the region, as well as at the global level. And so I've had several opportunities to speak to global audiences about the Caribbean experience and the critical considerations about how do we boost mental health investment, how do we boost access to care, how do we boost the capacity to deliver mental health services in our region, taking into account, of course, all the vulnerabilities. Beyond that, we do a lot of work around resource development, specifically for youth by youth. And so one of our flagship initiatives is youngcaribbeanminds.com, which is a digital mental health hub where young people across the region can access resources in one central spot. Resources including workbooks, including games, including directories of mental health and psychosocial support services as well. And the final tenet that we work on as an organization, and we have been over the past 5 years, is meaningful youth engagement. We believe that, you know, if we're going to be designing programs and policies that are intended to reach young people, then they need to be led by young people. And we try to inspire that level of action at all levels, so that young people are involved not only in hearing and verbalizing their issues and their challenges, but also being part of creating the solutions. And so the youngcaribbeanminds.com platform that I mentioned before, in partnership with UNICEF, was developed entirely by our Focal Points Network, which are young people across 17 Caribbean islands who are passionate about mental health. And so we believe that it also has to go an extra step. So yes, you plan. Yes, you add your views, you develop a solution, but we want you to as well to be a part of implementing that solution. And so in every single way, in every single thing that we do as an organization, we aim to fulfill our promise, which is to listen, to unite, and inspire. And at the core of that is that young people must be central to being, you know, leaders in their own right, but also executing the programs, the policies, the strategies that are meant to serve them.
Yes, please. You guys sound like you've covered a great deal of advocacy work as it relates to mental health. Yeah. And I love that the focus is placed specifically on young people, because they're the ones who are usually the most vulnerable to mental health. And I wanted to know, how do you think that we as a society could help break the stigma of mental health and young people?
Yeah, that is quite a mammoth task, right? And I think first we need to appreciate that mental health is not this abstract, oh, they're us versus them kind of thing. We all have mental health and well-being. In the same way that we all have physical health and well-being, what we all need to appreciate is that as much as your physical health varies on a spectrum, you're either well or you're unwell, the same is the case for mental health and well-being. And so the first thing that we need to get people to appreciate is that we all have mental health. And just as we flex our muscles to be well, we also need to flex the metaphorical mental health muscles in order to be well. In the same way as well that we seek help and support for our physical health and well-being, in so much that if you break your leg, you come down with a cold, you go see a doctor, the same thing applies for your mental health and well-being. And there are a myriad number of support structures that exist to help people prioritize their mental health and well-being. So that's the first two things. And that falls into the gamut of awareness. When I speak of awareness, it's not just important for the young person to appreciate that, but you can imagine that if I am in a school or I'm in a community center and I'm teaching a young person about mental health and well-being, but sending them back to a household or to a community that does not appreciate this as a concept, then it's quite challenging. And so when we think of awareness, when we think of stigma reduction, when we think of psychoeducation, it needs to be a whole of society, multi-stakeholder approach, so that carers of children are aware, so that the system itself is set up in a way to reinforce these priority areas. I'm thinking of things like a comprehensive HFLE program where mental health is featured in that. I'm talking about mental health being built into the whole ecosystem of our schools, so that when you walk into a school, you feel empowered to be there, and you feel affirmed to be there as well, such that your teachers are able to notice those cues about, okay, maybe something is not quite right with this child right now. What can I do to support them? What can I do to affirm them and bring them back into that space where they can be their most productive selves, right? Beyond that, is ensuring that when we have someone who is at the lower end of the spectrum, where they're in that red or yellow zone or an orange zone, and they're like, okay, I'm really not doing well and I need to access support, we need to make sure the support is there and is available for them. And this was the whole reason why we developed youngcaribbeanminds.com, why we developed a comprehensive directory of services for Barbados, so that children know, look, this is the first point of call. I can go to my GP or I can call a hotline number. I can reach out to my guidance counselor. Children and young people need to know, where exactly do I go for support? And when I reach out for support, what can I expect on the other side of that call? What can I expect on the other side of asking for that support? So that speaks to a level of capacity as well. We need to ramp up our mental health professionals in our schools, so that it's not just a guidance counselor, but perhaps a social worker, perhaps a psychologist who's able to, you know, assist with all the other various areas, for instance, the social determinants of mental health and well-being, that a child who didn't have breakfast this morning comes into the classroom and is so-called disruptive. It's not that they're a disruptive child, it's that there's a social issue that's leading to this particular outburst, and we need to do more to interrogate that. So that you see that it's a comprehensive picture. It's not just about awareness. It's not just about government reforming policies and legislations. It's not just about strategy, but it's about that community-based effort. It's about every single person coming together to ensure that our children can live up to their fullest potential and realize that, you know, mental health must be a priority for them.
So you would have just said that support, mental health support for the young people was important. And you would have outlined some ways that this support could be included in schools. Now, what about in the home, where parents are presented with the situation where their child comes and says, well, I feel depressed, I feel as though my mental health is not really where it should be. And the response is usually, what depression are you talking about? You don't pay any bills, you don't work anywhere, so you don't have depression, you don't know what you're talking about. So what would you then say to that parent?
Start your day with the Nation News e-paper. Enjoy the accessibility and new upgrades of the Nation News e-paper daily, whether on our mobile app or Nation News website. For added convenience, use our new audio read feature, which reads the newspaper aloud or look in the archives for any publications you may have missed. Get your news, your time, your way with the Nation News ePaper and enjoy our new upgrades.
Yeah, well, there's quite a bit to unpack there, Asheda. Firstly, is the idea that this is a parenting problem, right? And I don't think a lot of our parents are fully equipped for the role that they're entrusted with. And that's the fact that we're not doing enough to support them. And so we need to be teaching parents, for instance, about empathy, about what signs they should be looking out for, and how can they get their children connected to support. But also we need to appreciate that there's a context to this, that at times parents, they're either first-time parents, they don't have a lot of support, or they're just mirroring what they knew from their own childhood, so that they may have had parents whose response was just the same, right? And so in terms of building a level of understanding, I think we could be doing a better job in terms of teaching our parents, but also the understanding about what mental health is, right? And the fact that we all have it. That's one. More directly in terms of how can parents better support their children, our motto as an organization, like I mentioned before, listen, unite, inspire. And I think that this can be applied across several spheres. I invite parents to actually listen to their children. So a child comes to you and they say, I've been struggling with this, or I feel depressed. That's not a judgment on your parenting ability or your parenting style, right? It's literally a child uttering their emotions or something that they've been coping with. And so it's important that we meet our children where they're at. We take the time to listen. Okay, what do you mean when you say that you feel depressed? And they might perhaps raise the fact that they've been struggling with a friendship, they've been struggling at school, or they're just feeling quite sad all the time, right? And then you interrogate that a little bit further and try to understand what is the root cause and what is it that the child needs. And so is it that they need a hug? Because sometimes that could literally be all that they need. Is it that they need a listening ear? Is it that they need more support? Is it a problem in the school environment? Is it something in the community? Is it a particular person they're having a challenge with? I think the more that we're open to listening, and listening not to respond, but listening to empathize, to show a level of understanding and to offer a level of support, I think that would go a long way in building stronger parent-to-child relationships. The second thing is understanding that as a parent, you don't need to have it all figured out. And I think that some of our parents are stuck in a situation where they feel isolated and where they don't know where they can reach out for support. And so I think we could be more intentional, for instance, about hosting support groups. We could be more intentional about getting parents to talk to each other. I think we should be putting a lot greater emphasis on parent-teacher conferences and the Parents-Teacher Association. The full intention is that, you know, parents and teachers are working hand in hand to ensure a very safe, productive school environment, but also make sure that our children are cared for. But I think if you ask the average parent whether or not they attend a PTA, I understand that there are various factors behind that. Perhaps it's that they're quite busy, perhaps that you know, they have to make very tough choices about how they use their time. But I do think that we need to have a stronger push for really good, intentional, present parenting within our country, one which understands that the mental health of a child is something that is of utmost priority and that we all have a role to play. What I will say in closing is that if a parent finds themselves in a situation where their child is harming themselves, they're expressing thoughts of wanting to end their life, or there's just an overall struggle with their mental health and well-being, I would want to remind all parents that there are child guidance clinics available at every single polyclinic across the island. There's also help through the psychiatric hospital. There's help through organizations like Paradox, the Barbados Family Planning Association. And if at any time a parent would want to talk with someone, 536-4500, Lifeline Barbados, 24/7 hotline, where you can talk about anything remotely related to emotional, mental health, and overall well-being. And so we really need to get back to that community spirit and that idea of supporting each other, the village raising the child. And I think that there are several ways that we can get that done.
So what about the child now that feels as though they're not being heard when they present these issues? because that then makes the situation even worse. It's bottled up inside of them. They can't tell anybody for fear of being judged or not being heard. So what would you say to that child or that young person?
Yeah, and I can say to you with confidence that in talking to young people across this country, that is quite a general feeling amongst them, that they either don't feel comfortable at times sharing with their parents, or they've had less than ideal experiences after reaching out to a parent. So we touched already on how parents can be more empathetic. On the flip side now, what I would say to children and to young people is to appreciate the fact that sometimes people will not always be able to meet us where we want them to meet us, right? So that when you speak to your parent and they have that reaction, it is not necessarily because they do not care. It might be that they are not equipped to talk about that particular topic, all right? What I would say in that case is that you need to find some other means of support, be it that you speak to your guidance counselor, and I think that's a good first port of call. But secondly, if there's a teacher on your school campus who you feel confident and comfortable talking to, it's worth having a conversation. But also think about the other adults in your life, your coaches. You might have a community leader. You might have an adult in your church that you feel comfortable speaking to. Have a conversation. And the expectation is not that they're going to solve all of your problems, but just being able to take that concern from the inside, express it to someone, and have them genuinely listen, I think that's worthwhile. But beyond that, know, like I mentioned, that there are resources available. So again, Lifeline Barbados is available for our young people as well, 536-4500. There's the CASA hotline, 264-7151. And the Ministry of Youth also has a hotline. And all of these hotline details are available at bit.ly/MH directory 246. That's a resource directory that we've created for Barbados, a child and youth friendly version for young people to be able to access support by just one click, right? And so right now in Barbados, there's absolutely no reason for someone to remain in silence because there are support services available. And I understand that we live in a culture where strength seems to be the capacity to bear it all and not tell anybody. But in my estimation, what real strength is leveraging the resources around you and saying, hey, look, I'm having a difficult time managing this on my own. Let me reach out to someone else for a level of support. And what I would say in closing is keep trying. And I talk with young people all the time who share that they've spoken to a parent, they've spoken to a guidance counselor, they've spoken to a trusted adult, they've even tried therapy. And they feel as though they're not improving. And I would just say there is still reason to hope. Keep trying, keep reaching out, talk to a friend. Just do all you can to get the help that you need. Right? And I think that in itself is a form of advocacy, just self-advocacy. Yeah.
Yeah, I like the fact that you mentioned that if you're not getting it in the home, that you could go to other avenues to get the support. Yeah. So kind of shifting the gears, we're in May. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And I wanted to know from you, why is Mental Health Awareness Month, so important and significant?
Yeah, Mental Health Awareness Month is our time as mental health advocates to get that kind of front and center focus on mental health and well-being. It's also a time for persons who have lived experience of mental illness and other mental health challenges to also get that time to share those lived experiences and to have a bit of recognition of their own lived experiences. But I also think that Mental Health Awareness Month presents an opportunity for all of us as members of society in all different facets, whether we're leaders, whether we're policymakers, parents, caregivers, or just people who are trying to make ends meet just generally, to stop and take stock of our mental health and well-being. And so this month, we are focusing on the topic of community. Like I mentioned and alluded to earlier, there is a need for us to restore community. Why? Because in community, we find hope. In community, we find resilience. in community, we realize that we're not the only persons who are dealing with the stresses of this life. There are other people who are with us in this journey, and we can lean on each other, and there is power and strength in numbers. And so I would wish to encourage viewers that, you know, Mental Health Awareness Month is your time to reflect on your own mental health and well-being, to learn more about mental health and well-being, and do your part to scale up conversations, to scale up action, to scale up advocacy for mental health and well-being, so that everyone who is struggling knows that they need not struggle in silence, because their entire society, their entire community is behind them, realizing that mental health is a priority, and it's really up to all of us as individuals to make it a lived reality for all.
So anything in particular we can look out for from Let's Unpack It for Mental Health Awareness Month?
Yeah, you can look out for all the usual things that we do in terms of building awareness, building hope, you know, challenging stigma and mobilizing action. But outside of that, we're going to be very intentional about creating physical spaces for young people to connect. And so there's an event that we'll be putting on towards the end of the month where we're welcoming young people from across the country to join us in serene surroundings to talk about mental health and to unpack it, if you will. Beyond that, we'll be hosting the second of one of our youth symposiums towards the end of the month in partnership with PAHO, UNICEF, and the Ross University School of Medicine, where we'll be putting a focus on, you know, a solutions-based approach to mental health and well-being, specifically focusing on how do we prioritize the mental health of young people. As well, on the 30th of May, we will be launching a couple of new resources on the Young Caribbean Minds platform. And so now's a good time for viewers to be signing up at bit.ly/YCMClimate. There you'll be able to sign up for when those resources drop, that they come directly to your email. You'll also get a free gift once you sign up and register for that. But beyond that, I would want to invite all the viewers to follow us at Let's Unpack It Co. on all socials to ensure that they can stay connected to our work and to be a part of that work. We're also welcoming volunteers at the moment, especially Give Back volunteers. So there are plenty of ways to get plugged in to our work at LUA. We view ourselves as really just a table and a platform to catalyze this action. But it's really about bringing the community together to listen, to unite, and to inspire.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson, so much for joining us here today on the Nationwide Podcast and for reminding us that our mental health is important. We must prioritize it and to always reach out for support.
Yeah, an absolute pleasure to be here, Ashida. Thank you.
You can tune into this episode and more on the Nation News website, YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.